Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 5:19 PM, that is Saudi Arabia time. Today is January 12th, and I thought we'd kick off with natural gas because it's up 27 cents, so this is a very clear upward dynamic from the region and the 200-day moving average. And it's in response to, a little bit of additional cold weather coming through in the US. But I also had the opportunity today to have a good long chat with Adam Rosenzweig, who, along with Lee Goring, they write these reports that I've posted on occasion, and an increasing number of subscribers have been sending me along their research. So they're very much of the opinion that the calculus for renewable energy doesn't really add up. And they're quite negative on the outlook or the possibility for any kind of efficiency gains to be gained from hydrogen as well. And they anticipate, too, that the price of oil is going to continue higher because there's no additional money pouring into deploying additional assets or to drill new wells, and that the supply of drilled but or the ducks inventory is going to be fully used up by about March. So they're anticipating that oil prices are going to rise, and when we think about the trend overall, well, there's nothing on the chart to suggest that that's not going to be the case, because this has been a quite orderly consolidation in the region of the $80 level, and every time it's got above 80, and there's only been really two occasions, once in 2018 and once a couple of months ago, it's failed. But now we're back above the 80 level again, and it's looking really quite well supported. So it does beg the question, just how high do oil prices have to go before it encourages additional drilling? And of course, then there'll be an interval between when the drilling takes place and when the actual supply is delivered to the market. And this whole question of ESG, and particularly with regard to oil, the environment, it was very much to the fore in the Future Minerals Forum today. There were a large number of people talking about the social elements of mining. There were a couple of other things that I think were particularly were the sentiments that were coming through from various mining CEOs that were given opportunities to talk their book. So we had Barrick Gold CEO, we had the CEO of Vedanta, the CEO of Alcoa, the CEO of Eurasian Resources, and so lots of people talking about opportunities. One thing that's very clear is everybody sees the opportunity from the energy transition. They see that potentially metals and mining have the potential to take a chunk out of the reliance of the global economy on oil and gas. Or perhaps the more correct way of talking about it would be that they're salivating at that potential opportunity. And I think they also feel like they are wrongfully or they've been victimized in the eyes or in their own eyes at the hands of the environmental movement, because more than a few people have said or repeated the refrain that if it's not grown, it's mined, to me in various conversations today. And obviously that is true, that there's a necessity for mining in any economy, because we need metals and materials from somewhere, and they don't just appear out of nowhere. So obviously, we do need to have a mining industry, but nobody wants to have a mine in their backyard. And the miners themselves, well, they feel like they are doing necessary work, and the efforts to which they go aren't appreciated, and the message was clear that they feel that there is a dearth of new talent coming into the industry, and that every effort has to be made to reach out to younger generations and smart young people to enter the mining sector and to paint it as a way in which people can change the world for the better. And of course, that's a bit of a hard ask. And certainly, against a background of an environmental movement which is very well organized and vilifies the mining sector at every opportunity. And then the other thing that they were talking about was that regulatory regimes tend to be cyclical. So I thought that was a particularly insightful piece of commentary. And that was obviously something that miners want. They want a predictable suite of regulations, and that is, in fact, what Saudi Arabia is offering, because they're not overly interested in royalties, but what they are much more interested in is in creating downstream utility for the metals that are mined within the Arabian Peninsula. So there's the real potential that Saudi Arabia is going to start to become a major processor of lithium, and right now China is one of the big processors of the metal. And they've also discovered significant phosphate. So the CEO of Mosaic was brought on to talk about phosphate, and he made the valid point that it's as much about the chemical process of manufacturing a product as it is about sourcing a viable resource. Well, it's looking likely that Saudi Arabia does have phosphate, and phosphate is quite a rare thing to be able to mine, and it's vital in terms of the global supply chain for foods. So fertilizer companies are starting to recover, and Mosaic is pushing on the upside. Now, I think it's particularly relevant that what we're seeing in the commodity sector is a large number of different companies from different portions of the commodity sector all breaking on the upside. So there's a clear consensus that the copper is the big winner, and that prices will have to rise meaningfully to encourage new supply into the market. So prices were up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, up 11 cents and clearly firming from the region of the trend mean. And this has looked like just a consolidation for most of the last year, and it's a consolidation in the region of the all-time peak, so it's perhaps not all that surprising that we might get a pause. But I suspect that by the time this bull market has ended, we're going to be looking at $10 copper, not $4.50 copper, and it could potentially be significantly more than that. And this, of course, is one of the big challenges for the renewable energy sector, because they've prospered because the cost of commodities has been low. And if commodity prices rise, well, then the cost of producing solar panels and wind turbines is also going to increase significantly, and that's going to affect the economics of these projects. I also had the pleasure to meet someone who from, well, let me find the business card. I believe it was Ritchie Energy. They're an Australian company. Rich Energy, RITCH, and they are claiming at least to have developed a brand new type of solar panel, and they don't want to seek a patent for it because they know that as soon as they do that, it's going to be stolen. So, of course, that complicates the effort to go off and find money. and they're also a battery minerals company. So there's lots of interesting little companies here that are also attempting to raise money for ventures. And because Saudi Arabia is now positioning itself as being both a major destination for investment and exploration, as well as the clear intention to create an industrial base as part of their own 2030 vision, well, they're also looking at sourcing raw materials and processing them domestically. So there's a significant number of smaller miners that are here looking to source capital. And I've talked to two separate gold miners from Egypt today as well, both in Saudi Arabia looking to source capital to go off and build holes. Then I also had the pleasure of sitting down with the CEO of Perseus Mining. And I thought that he was very frank in talking about some of the mistakes that were made during the big bull market, and that they've just begun to pay a dividend. They're going to continue to pay that dividend, and they're still quite profitable. He was also very clear in stating that they had a credit line during the pandemic, and when the pandemic struck and everything went haywire, they had really no intention of drawing on it, but they took down the whole amount, and they've almost paid it back because they're still on a strong cash flow and high margin basis. And Perseus hasn't been shooting the lights out. But one thing is that I thought was interesting is they've got two mines, and they're in Côte d'Ivoire and Ghana. And historically, Ghana has been a rather quiet place. It's often been described as Africa for beginners because it's predictable and it's a reasonably peaceful place. So, what I found interesting was that they have a bigger problem with artisanal miners in Ghana than they do in Côte d'Ivoire. And instead, the Ivory Coast is, despite its history of significant strife and civil war, is in fact much more active in being communicative with the mining companies, and that the work that's underway on the social side is bearing better fruit there, and that the population surrounding the mine is has bought into developing it, so the company actually has fewer production problems in the more geopolitically sensitive country than it does in the geopolitically sensitive one, because what he said was there's just too many people in Ghana, and lots of people turn up as artisanal miners and try to jump the claim. So these are, I think, interesting. Or at least I found them interesting nuggets of information, but at least the company is paying down debt and paying dividends, and they are exploring within their own jurisdiction, so they're looking at expanding their mines, and they may buy another mine at some stage, but they're more looking at cheaper exploration, which would be just to drill around the holes they've already got. I did ask whether if they thought whether he was going to be on the M&A trail or whether they were going to be the subject of an M&A, and he was quite clear in stating that if the price was right, they'd get taken over. And I suspect that there's a good number of the mid-tier type gold miners are in the same boat, that they would be happy to return capital to shareholders and generate wealth for those shareholders, and not least because some of them are pushing on an age and would probably wish to retire with a victory. Well, gold prices today were a little bit softer and still holding the gain that we saw yesterday, but we're going to need a bigger catalyst. to, I think, push us up and through this $1,850 area. The dollar index has been weakening, and it was down in a dynamic manner yesterday, and it's a little bit softer again in here today, but gold hasn't really followed through. And then stock markets are responding to a weaker dollar and the potential that the Fed is going to be somewhat more dovish. So the Nasdaq is up again in here today and gapping up right off the open. So this continues to look like a rebound from the region of the trend mean. And it goes to show that a reaction of 5% seems to be enough to sway the Federal Reserve, and that seems like an awfully small reaction to sway the conviction of the central bank, but that's the reality that we're living in. So we're still in a benign environment overall, because it's just unlikely that what the bond market has priced in terms of interest rates, can in fact be realized. Now, the CSI 300 was up about 1% today, but realistically, it's been up and down over the course of the last 5 days and bouncing from the 4,800 level. The renminbi has been pretty much inert, and that's contributing to the range that we've seen on the Asia dollar index. But the Asia dollar index is pushing higher, and it's testing the upper side of this little range and firming from the region of the trend mean. So I think it's more likely than not we're going to see additional upward strength in Asian currencies. The dollar index is mostly euro, and the euro is very oversold, so there's clear scope for a reversion towards the mean, and it's breaking out in here today. So then the pound is right at the upper side of the base relative to the euro and testing the 1.2 level. So this is another example of a lengthy range where occasional flurries above 120 have not been sustained. Now, it looks a lot better supported on this occasion, but it's overbought in the short term, so it wouldn't be all that surprising if we see a little pause and consolidation over the course of the next week or two. But it does continue to look like a base formation overall, and the pound has been depressed for really quite a long time. And the FTSE 100 is the best performing major index in the world this year because of that relative strength in terms of the pound and its defensive qualities, and the fact that it is packed full of companies that pay dividends and have a long history of increasing those dividends is certainly a positive that's helping to support interest in the market. If the dollar continues lower, then it's quite likely that we're going to see emerging markets do well. Now, we can look at the performance of various currencies since 2007. So it's 15 years, but I took 2007 because it was right before the financial crisis. So the Turkish lira is down 90%. The Brazilian real and the Russian ruble are down about the same amount. And then you've got the Indian rupee and the Mexican peso down about the same amount as well. But what I find interesting is that, let's say we look at the ruble, for example, the majority of the decline happened more than a year ago. And in fact, what we have is a process of support building that's been going on for a while. So the ruble was a little weaker in here today, but it's been holding this 80 level for years. I do apologize for yawning. I've got chronic jet lag, and I only got 2 hours of sleep last night, so I fully anticipate taking a little nap before going to this gala dinner this evening. But when we look at the outlook for these currencies. There's been a process of support building going on for a long time, and the Brazilian real certainly hasn't been ranging for as long as the ruble has. But it does look like it is trying to build support around that six level, and a good portion of the decline occurred during the pandemic. And then we had another big devaluation in 2014 and 15. So if this is support building and the dollar is going to weaken, well, a strengthening currency would greatly enhance the outlook for these emerging markets. And the Indian rupee as well has also been ranging, and it's now trading below the trend mean for the first time since early 2021. But ultimately, it's the rupee has been in a secular downtrend, so it will need a lot to change that trend. But as long as the currency is reasonably stable, well, then that will act as a magnet because the country is going through its demographic dividend, there's a new credit cycle underway, and growth is picking up. And I think the catalyst that we've been waiting for is a weak dollar, and the dollar is weakening now. So it's overbought in the short term. It's certainly going to unwind that overbought condition. But nobody wants a strong currency. And I think it is more likely than not it's the very oversold currencies and the minor currencies with higher interest rates and improving growth and perhaps moderating inflation after this quarter that will start to exhibit outperformance relative to Wall Street. So we're potentially at the beginning of a new emerging market cycle. And if the mining sector gets its way, then there's going to be a lot of investment in the green sector and the metals necessary to supply it will have to be mined by a select group of miners. So we can then think about the performance of the FTSE 350 mining index, and it has pulled back sharply over the course of the last 12 months, but it is now beginning to demonstrate some support in here. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.